Welcome everybody to Parshas Vayetze, 5767. This year, when we look at the Parsha, we're looking for conversations with Hashem. Not too many in this Parsha, but there's one very famous one. I guess you could call it a conversation. It's not a normal kind of conversation. I'm referring to Yaakov's dream, where Hashem speaks to him in a dream. And the Parsha reads that Yaakov was getting ready to leave. He left from Beersheba, from his home where he lived with his parents, and he was going towards Haran, which was the place of his mother's birth, where his relatives lived. And as we read in last week's Parsha, the reason for his journey was twofold. A, to escape from the wrath of his brother Esav, after Yaakov received the blessings that initially had been designated for Esav. Now Esav is furious that Yaakov has the blessings and wants to kill him. And so his mother says, run away because your brother will try to kill you. In addition to that, Yaakov is not yet married. He's already 63 years old and he is not yet married. And as his father, he's not going to marry a Canaanite, so he is sent on his own this time. He does not need a proxy like his father had, Eliezer. That was only because Isaac had been sanctified as an offering on the altar, and therefore he was not allowed to leave Israel. Yaakov, however, does not have that restriction, and he is allowed to go out of the land of Israel for this purpose. We know that he ended up staying in the exile, if you will, for 20 years. He did not come back until he had lived, sojourned with his father-in-law to be Laban, worked for him for 20 years as a shepherd, during which time Laban actually became very prosperous due to Yaakov's blessing and his very fine business skills and his honesty, his impeccable business ethic. Also during that time, Yaakov married two of Laban's daughters, Rachel and Leah. First, Leah, who was swindled, he was tricked by Laban. He had requested the hand of Rachel, and Laban tricked him and gave him Leah at the wedding, claiming that that was the custom of the place, but of course no excuse for having misled him like that. And then he subsequently worked 7 more years, and he was able to marry Rachel. He really married Rachel 1 week after he married Leah, but he had to stay another 7 years to earn them, so to speak. And then he stayed another 6 years after that. Then there's a very dramatic scene where Yaakov leaves, kind of steals away without telling Laban. He has his whole family. He has by now 4 wives. He has had children with Rachel and Leah and their maidservants. They now have among them 11 sons and 1 daughter. And they are leaving to go back to Canaan. Laban pursues them and accuses Yaakov of stealing his heart and stealing his knowledge and leaving without permission. And he also accuses him of stealing, at which time Yaakov lays into him, but good, and tells him how, just the contrary, you swindled me, and I never once did anything dishonest. I did not compromise my faithfulness and my reliability an iota towards you. I went above and beyond the letter of the law. Famous verses at the end of the Parsha, Chapter 31, verse 38. These 20 years I have been with you. Your ewes and she-goats never miscarried, nor did I eat rams of your flock. That which was mangled I never brought you. In other words, even though it was not my responsibility, I did not put that up to the company losses. I myself would bear the loss. From me you would exact it, whether it was stolen by day or stolen by night. Even times of the day when generally shepherds sleep, I denied myself from sleep. This is how I was. By day, scorching heat consumed me. Frost by night, my sleep drifted from my eyes. This is my 20 years in your household. I served you 14 years for your 2 daughters, 6 years for your flocks, and you changed my wage 100 times. Had not the God of my father, the God of Abraham and the dread of Isaac, been with me, you would surely have now sent me away empty-handed. God saw my wretchedness and the toil of my hands, so he admonished you last night. He really puts Laban in his place. But back to the conversation. So Yaakov is on his way, leaving Canaan into this unknown experience in the exile. And Hashem appears to him in the famous dream, and in the dream there's a ladder, and on the ladder are angels ascending and descending. Vihinei Hashem nitzav alav, and behold, Hashem was standing over him. He is sleeping. Vayomar, ani Hashem elokei Avraham avicha ve'elokei Yitzchak, ha'aretz asher atah shochev oleha l'cho etenena ulezarecha. I am Hashem, God of Abraham, your father, and God of Yitzchak. The ground upon which you are lying, to you will I give it and to your descendants. And he promises him that his descendants will multiply, they will return to the land and spread out powerfully in all directions. He reiterates the blessing to Abraham, V'nivrechu v'cho kol mishpechos u'adama u'vizarecha, all the families of the earth shall bless themselves by you and by your offspring. And he promises him protection. V'hinei anochi imach u'shmarticha b'chol asher teleich v'ashivosicha el ho'adamo hazos ki lo e'ezavcha ad asher imasisi es asher divarti lach. Behold, I am with you. I will guard you wherever you go, and I will return you to this soil. For I will not forsake you until I will have done what I have spoken about you. In these few words, in this conversation with Hashem, and I'll leave Yaakov's response for another time, Hashem basically informs Yaakov that he will be going into exile, galus. And we know from tradition that not only was this a one-time event in Yaakov's life, but this was indeed a foreshadowing of the lives of Yaakov's children and grandchildren, who would be spending over 200 years in the land of Egypt. And that was in turn foreshadowing for really a very, very long history of galus for the Jewish people. In fact, one of the explanations of the angels in the dream, cited here in the footnote, are the four kingdoms. Jacob was shown the guardian angels of the four kingdoms that would ascend to dominate Israel. Jacob saw each angel climbing a number of rungs corresponding to the years of its dominion, and then descending as its reign ended. Our tradition is filled with the notion, and of course history bears it out, that there were four nations that dominated over the world and over Israel. Babylonia, which took the first temple, they reigned over us for 70 years. Media, also connected with Persia, dominated us for 52 years. Greece, in the land of Israel, that occurs during the Hanukkah story, for 130 years. And then there was the angel of Edom / Esav, which all the other angels went up and came down. Yaakov could see it. But the angel of Edom kept climbing indefinitely, up and up and up and up and up, symbolizing the current exile, which seems to be endless. We are still in that exile. That exile has continued from the Roman dominion, who took the second temple, up till this very day. And we also feel like Esav. It seems to be endless. There's supposed to be a redemption to this too, but when's it going to come already? God assured him that he would receive divine protection and eventually return to the land, and that promise holds to us to this day, that we will see the end of this fourth exile also. Here we have, introducing into the Torah, through the lives of the patriarchs, a very, very central concept and theme in Jewish tradition and history, and that is the theme of galut, of exile. What I'd like to do today, since this is what the conversation revolves around, is I would like to discuss with you, from a pre-Kabbalah and a Musar perspective, what is the purpose for the Jewish people to go into galus and to spend most of our history in galus, in exile? What is the purpose of it? What is being accomplished? And we have begun to have this conversation about all of the events that we've learned about in the Torah. We are grounded in the Kabbalistic idea that the world has gone through a stage of decline, which really relates back to Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, and it must go through a rectification. If you heard this notion from another religion, that's where they got it from. You know, when Adam and Eve partook of the tree, the world went from a world where Tov is certainly dominant within man, goodness, and man merely has to choose good over some type of external evil, to a world in which good and evil join together inside of us in the form of the good inclination and the evil inclination. And it is man's very, very difficult task, as we established last week, Sur Meira Va'aseh Tov. Stay away from evil and do good. It's like trying to play offense and defense at the same time, if you relate to sports. Last week, we had the very brilliant insight, an interpretation of Rav Gedalia Shor, of blessed memory. He served as the Rosh Yeshiva in New York, Torah Vidas, for many years, and he was a prolific thinker and writer. Rav Shor interprets the incident last week of Yitzchak trying to bestow his blessing upon Esav in the following way. Ultimately, man's purpose, and this becomes the heritage of Abraham and his descendants, is to rectify the world by engaging in Sur Meira Va'aseh Tov, battling the forces of evil from within us and from around us, and doing good, clinging to God, clinging to His Torah and to His teachings. Yitzchak thought that wouldn't it be wonderful if Yaakov, who by now, even at a young age, desired to cling to God, basically, aseh tov. He didn't struggle with the evil inclination. As a young lad, he would run to the houses of study, where Esav was out in the field. Esav had a knack or had a desire for other things. But Yitzchak's assessment was that Esav had a little bit of tov also, and maybe Esav would devote himself to Sur Meira, to fighting those internal battles, and making the world at least a moral place, and then Yaakov could devote himself to the Aseh Tov, to the doing of good. It would be a fantastic partnership, it would be a fantastic rectification. Yaakov and Esav would rectify the world together. But Rivka knew otherwise, and Rivka sabotaged this plan, because Rivka understood that Esav was not going to engage in Sur Meira, staying away from evil. He was just going to be part of the evil. And Yaakov, on the other hand, would be duty-bound to struggle in both fronts. Sur Meira Va'aseh Tov. And thus, Yaakov needs the blessings that Yitzchak had intended for Esav. And now Yaakov has to set his mind for him and his descendants to embark on the rectification of the world through Sur Meira Va'aseh Tov. What I'd like to do, and I thought about this a lot, and if you'll permit me to be somewhat analytical in a philosophical way, to try to understand exactly what kind of a rectification process has to happen. Let me share with you the thoughts that I have about this. What is Yaakov's task, according to the new plan? Yaakov has to engage in Sur Meira, turn away from evil. Did we not establish that Yaakov doesn't struggle with evil? Why does he have to engage in Sur Meira if he doesn't struggle with Ra? Who struggles with Ra? Esav and his counterparts, all the other nations. So how is Yaakov going to play that role? Would you say that Yaakov has to somehow banish the Ra of the other nations? I could think of a better way to do that. And we're being very philosophically honest here. The best way to banish the Ra of the other nations, quite frankly, Hashem should remove them from the world. And then we will have rectification, because the Ra will be eliminated and Yaakov will be pursuing Tov. In other words, Yaakov doesn't have to get rid of his Ra because he doesn't have it. So the question really is twofold. Why do the other nations have to continue to exist in God's plan? If they were going to participate in the war against evil, okay. Then we understand everybody plays their role. The non-Jews play their role. The Jews play their role. But we've said that that's been voted down. So why do they have to continue to exist? And why does Yaakov have to fight a battle which is not even his own battle? And worse yet, Hashem tells Yaakov that in order to bring the world to rectification, you have to go and live among the nations in exile. What on earth for? Why is that necessary for the rectification of the world? Let's just eliminate the others and keep Yaakov and his descendants, and now we can go to Olam Haba. Just as it would have been, says Rabbi Luzzatto, if Adam had merited in the first place. We all would have gone to Olam Haba. What's missing? You know, there is a thought in Jewish sources that the nations of the world play a very, very important role in supporting the activities and the efforts of the Jewish people. There is such a thought. And they play their supportive role. But it doesn't really seem to make sense. That sounds like had Yitzchak's plan won out, that's what it would have been. But if they're not playing that role, what are they helping us to do? They're providing us with material resources. But to do what? To rectify the world? Again, I keep on coming back in circles because there seems to be a circular logic here. Well, I'm getting to the point. You see, Yaakov himself single-handedly is not rectifying the world. He's rectifying himself, but we have to rectify the entire Bria, the entire creation. The entire creation, as we know, consists of the 70 branches and Avraham and his descendants. This is something that we've established as well from Rabbi Luzzatto. There's a big world out there. Yaakov has purified his own soul. Yaakov has eradicated evil from him, but he hasn't eradicated evil from the rest of the world. But again, how is he going to do that? Is he going to teach them? Is he going to go around? Are we to understand that the purpose of exile is for the Jewish people to go and proselytize and try to get the nations who have been disqualified from being our partners to somehow become Sur Meira? Is that the purpose of the exile, that we should go around and do kiruv to all the other nations of the world? That doesn't seem to be Jewish tradition. So I'm still stuck. So here is another approach. And it's something that, truthfully, is well known. This is the way that Rav Dessler approached this subject. And we once had a class on it. I found it in 2004, Parshas B'Shalach. And he went into great detail, which we're not going to review all of it. Yes, Yaakov and his descendants have to rectify the world by turning away from evil, not an evil that is found inside, but the evil that is found outside. Rabbi Yerucham Levavitz taught us, quoting the Vilna Gaon, that there are two Yetzer Haras, two evil inclinations, the inner one and the outer one. Yaakov apparently had eradicated the inner Yetzer Hara from himself, but the outer Yetzer Hara still exists. Yaakov's job and his descendants' job is to eradicate the evil from outside, which come from Esav. But again, how is that done? The way that it's done is that Yaakov goes into exile, and he's subject to a man who lives with evil, who practices evil. And Yaakov's test is not to learn from his ways. That's how he eradicates evil. He doesn't reform Lavan. He can't. But he eradicates Lavan's evil by living in his neighborhood, by living under his machinations, and remaining Yaakov, remaining a man of truth, even when living among falsehood. That is Yaakov's avodah, his work in exile. And that is the Jewish mission in history, is to live among the influences of evil around the world, not try to change them, but to try to maintain our integrity as children of Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. That is the avodah of Sur Meirav Asei Tov within ourselves. That is exactly what went on in Parshas Vayetze. He went to Lavan. Lavan was the example of evil, of falsehood, of trickery, of deception. And Yaakov understands his job. His job is exactly what he says to Lavan at the end of the 20 years. He says, I have been working this entire time. What we read before, these 20 years I have been with you, I bore the loss. I stayed up night and day. I served you 14 years faithfully. You changed my wage 100 times. Any lesser individual would say, well, if Lavan can treat me this way, then I'll treat him that way. Not Yaakov. Because he understood that's not how to do Sur Meira. The way to do Sur Meira is to stand up in the face of evil, not to try to change the evil, but not let it change me. That's a profound idea, and that is, and Rav Dessler says this, that is the primary function of the Jew in exile. So when Hashem comes to Yaakov in the dream and he says, I have some business trips for you to go on, Yaakov, and your descendants also, you're going to be meeting lots of interesting, colorful characters out there. You're going to be meeting Bavel, Babylonians, who were well known for perhaps the trait of arrogance, of conquest, getting their genes from the likes of Nimrod, Nebuchadnezzar, who just wanted to conquer the world. You will have to be exposed to that kind of a person, to that kind of society, and you will have to work very hard to avoid becoming like that. And that has been our struggle, is not allowing ourselves to be pulled down by the nations that we live near. You will be meeting people like the Persians, who are going to introduce hedonism. They are going to have things like parties in Shushan for 180 days, and they're going to invite you. And you're going to have to struggle whether you're going to listen to people like Mordechai, who is going to say, don't fall into their traps. You are going to meet people like the Greeks, the Yevanim, who are going to try to change the ideology of the world, moving away from religion into humanitarianism, into rational thinking, into science, into culture, and reject all that which is godly and that which is supernatural. You're going to have to fight to maintain your belief in Torah and in God, a God-centered world. And you're going to have to meet people the likes of the Romans, who are going to throw everything at you at once. And that is the job of the Jew. Sur Meira, we didn't inherit the Ra. We've actually inherited a clean inside from Yaakov. But it's the external Yetzer Hara that is going to tempt us and is going to try to change us. Our sole job in Galus, in various forms, is to resist the temptation to change and to become like our neighbors. Now, in conclusion, Yaakov Avinu teaches us two very important tools that we need to be successful in this work. The first tool is, Yaakov did not go to live with Lavan until he went and he studied Torah for 14 years in the yeshiva of Eiver. Eiver was the grandson of Noach. And all the commentaries are wondering, he was 63 years old. He had been a student at the Yitzchak yeshiva for over a half a century. He's running for his life. Why does he have to go and get a second degree now all of a sudden? Why does he have to go to another yeshiva for 14 years? Quoted famous answer by Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, which I heard in the Dvar Torah when I just entered yeshiva. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky explained that the first 63 years of his life he studied Torah with his father in an atmosphere insulated from the corruption of Canaan. Now he would be living in Haran among people who were Laban's comrades in dishonesty. To survive spiritually in such an environment, he needed the Torah of Shem and Eiver. They too, being the descendants of Noah, had been forced to cope with corrosive surroundings. Shem had lived in the generation of the flood, and Eiver had lived with those who built the Tower of Babel. Jacob's 14 years in their tutelage, or their disciples, made it possible for him to emerge spiritually unscathed from his personal exile. That was his personal preparation for the coming ordeal. So that's resource number one. Yaakov teaches us, if we are going to survive and to succeed in our exile, which is to avoid the temptation of becoming like our neighbors, we have to be rooted in the Torah of Shem and Eiver. We have to be submerged and saturated with the ideals of Torah and the emphasis of Torah that teaches us about how to be wary, how to be familiar with the kind of schemes and machinations that the Lavans of the world will throw at us, and how to transcend them. That was the kind of Torah that we need to be equipped with in our exile. In every exile of the Jewish people have gone, it is the degree of adherence to this Torah that has determined the success and, unfortunately, the failure to survive and to thrive in exile. And the second thing he teaches us is that he goes into Haran and he starts a family. And this is not just a regular family. This is the 12 tribes of Israel. And in a few parshios, we're going to learn how the 12 tribes multiply and become the 70 souls that descended into Egypt. As we said before, Yaakov is one person. Yaakov can rectify as a model the world by accomplishing Sur Meirah against Lavan. But again, we have to rectify the world. And there are 70 forces of evil out there, all the 70 nations. And we're just one. And so there has to be a core of 70 souls which have the correspondence to the 70 nations in order to resist that evil. In other words, we can't do it as a single person or as a single entity. We have to develop a multi-tiered and a complex structure of different kinds of tribes, different kinds of personalities who are equipped to ward off the different kinds of evil that are thrown in our way. And what that means is we cannot win the war against evil without the teamwork of the 12 tribes. A single Jew or a family or a community cannot win the war. We need each other. We need the full structure in order to ward off the evil around us. So there we have it. Torah is our lifeline, and Achdus, uniting the various forces within the Jewish people, which are multifaceted, and we are going to be learning about them. They're so multifaceted that sometimes they are conflicting with each other. We have to learn how we can work together even though we're so different. That is one of our great struggles as well. That's only a tool that we need to fulfill the ultimate job, which is to ward off the evil. But that is a vital, vital aspect. The Torah is vital, and the unity of the 12 tribes is vital. Those are the tools that Yaakov developed for us so that we can fulfill this ultimate purpose of bringing rectification, tikkun, to the world by the eradication of the evil. Again, we are not trying to teach the world how not to be evil. That's not our job. Our job is to keep ourselves truthful, keep ourselves who we are, the people of truth, by not changing in the face of evil. All of this can be summed up in the very beautiful phrase that we have in the beginning of next week's Parsha, very, very revealing. What was on Yaakov's mind the whole time? Parsha's Vayishlach. It's very well known that Yaakov comes back after the 20 years and he's about to encounter his brother Esav, and he says to his messengers, go ahead and tell Esav, Ko amar avdecha Yaakov. So says your servant Yaakov, Im Lavan garti, I have sojourned with Lavan, bo'echar adata, and I have lingered there until now. I have been in Golis this whole time. What was he thinking when he said those words, Im Lavan garti, I have lived with Lavan? So the famous Rashi, garti, are the same letters as Taryag, the 613 commandments. Tell Esav, I lived with Lavan, but I was equipped. I had my Taryag, I had my mitzvos, below Lamadati Mimasav Harayim, and I did not learn from his evil ways. That is the end-all and the be-all of Yaakov's Golis experience. And that is what we're all living for. Lo Lamadati Mimasav Harayim. We do not learn from their ways. If we have our Torah and we have our unity of the various parts of our team, we will succeed not to learn from their ways, and that is how we will bring the world to the state when Hashem, of course, we can't do any of this without Hashem's constant help. As he said to Yaakov on the ladder, I will be with you. I will go wherever you are, and I will provide for you what you need. and I will bring you back to this place. There's no question that we only succeed with Hashem's help every step of the way. But if we put our mind to what our task really is, then we will, with Hashem's help, see the world come to its ultimate tikkun, its ultimate rectification. Shabbat to you.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.